Victoria's Spring Racing Carnival, which is reaching a fever pitch with Derby Day tomorrow and then the race that stops a nation on Tuesday, the Melbourne Cup. This year's celebrations have been overshadowed by claims of animal cruelty after the ABC's 7:30 program revealed that hundreds of Australian racehorses are being sent to the slaughterhouse every year. In response, Racing Victoria and the Victoria Racing Club this week promised an expanded equine welfare program. For more on this, I'm joined today by Shelley Hancock. She's principal of Hancock's Bloodstock, one of Australasia's leading racehorse syndicators. As well, we're joined by Sydney University's Professor Phil McManus. He's co-author of the book, The Global Horse Racing Industry, Social, Economic, Environmental and Ethical Perspectives. Welcome to you both to breakfast.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Cathy. Thank you. Good morning.
Shelley, could I begin with you? You've been buying and syndicating racehorses for more than 35 years, so you're very familiar with the industry. Why are thoroughbreds ending up at abattoirs? Is this, as some people are describing it, an appalling indictment on the industry?
Cathy, I don't think it's an appalling indictment on the industry. I think there has always been wastage in the industry. And when I was much younger in the industry, when a broodmare, say, had finished her useful breeding life, ethical breeders would just drop her in the paddock and bury her on the property. And many mares were disposed of in that way. And many racehorses went off to have an afterlife as a pleasure horse after racing if they were suitable for it. And at the end of the day, the same thing would happen to them. This is a very different age where the suburban encroachment of every city has meant there's far less land for horses to go to once their useful racing life is over. And, of course, you come to a point. White English countries are far more probably touchy-feely about creatures, animal, living creatures, than, say, all of Europe, which regards everything on four legs as something that you can eat, whereas in England, or UK, America, North America, Australia, New Zealand, we do regard horses very much as animals that must be looked after to the end of their days.
I mean, you must have been distressed by those images on the 7:30 program.
I am distressed by those images, and I do think if you're going to euthanize a horse, there are better ways to do it than sending it through an abattoir. And I'd have to say that those images of the Queensland abattoir were particularly horrific because it showed no respect for the animal. And, you know, I've been to plenty of other abattoirs where they slaughter all sorts of animals, and it hasn't been like that. It mightn't be the prettiest sight in the world, but it's certainly not. It's not done with any degree of cruelty and getting horses or whatever animal into a petrified state. And I was under the impression it didn't do them any good to have them in a overexcited, highly nervous state before you slaughtered them.
Well, certainly what it's done is put a wider lens on the industry and broader welfare issues. Earlier this week, as I mentioned, Racing Victoria and the Victoria Racing Club have announced a package of reforms expanding equine welfare programs, I think something like $25 million. But what's your sense? Is that going to fix the problem?
I don't think it's going to fix the problem. All horses are ID'd from the time they're born, and they're like dogs and cats, they're microchipped, DNA tested, the whole rigmarole. But at what point is a person's responsibility for a horse to start and end, and whose responsibility is it? For instance, when I buy a horse, it's been bred, it might have already gone through one sale, so I'm in fact the third owner. We have it for some years and then on sale it maybe to northern New South Wales or Queensland to continue racing. Where does the responsibility for the animal start and end? Now, you know, we try very hard to rehouse all horses, and some horses are sold from us with the ongoing thing that if you don't want it, we want it back, we can find a lovely home for this horse. But not everybody's going to come back to you and say, well, I don't want this anymore. You know, do you want to buy it back or can I give it back to you? But the horses do just disappear.
But that's the point around then these calls for a national traceability register. Victoria's calling on the other states to join them in setting up such a national register. Is it a good idea? Would that work?
It's a good idea. I don't know how it would work, though, because who are you tracing it to? This is the idea. Well, the horse was microchipped as a foal. It obviously carries the same microchip all its life, but the ownership changes. So where does the responsibility lie? And I think that's one of the great ethical difficulties with this is whose responsibility is it when the horse has finished its useful racing or breeding life, or it goes out of the pool? And it may be a horse that started its breed, you know, was bred in Scone in New South Wales, might end up in Darwin. So where does the responsibility lie there? And the other thing, it's lovely to throw money at this and retraining horses, but not every thoroughbred is suitable to be an ongoing equestrian horse for anyone.
Phil McManus, can I bring you in here? Just in terms of these calls for a national traceability register, as I understand it, you're advocating a whole-of-life approach. Is that the same as a traceability register?
It's different than a traceability register because it's looking at some of the issues that Shelley's been raising about the horses and how they're managed from when they're young. So if there's going to be aftercare of the horses once they leave the racing industry, I totally agree with Shelley. Some of them are not suitable for being used for equestrian mounts for sports for, say, a 10-year-old girl or something. It's just not going to work. There's ethical issues there. And that partly goes to the way in which they're managed throughout their racing career. So I think we have to start from the very beginning by saying that not every horse is going to be successful. Most of them will not be successful on the racetrack. And even if those that are successful will only be successful for a limited period of time. So we have to be thinking about the aftercare from the very beginning, not something that is added on at the very end. So I think that's a whole of industry approach. And that's where the issue about different owners is important, but an industry perspective is necessary.
Just on this question of wastage, there's been some focus about attention put to the number of horses that are being bred. Is there overbreeding that's part of the problem here?
Yes, but the number of horses being bred has come down substantially in Australia from roughly 18 to 20,000 about 10 years ago to approximately 13,000 today. But there's still going to be overbreeding, and there will always be overbreeding because we don't know which horses are going to be successful. So we can reduce the number of horses being bred, but the structure of the industry is a competitive industry. Very few horses will be successful, and those that will be successful won't be successful for their whole life. So reducing the number of horses being bred is important, but as a standalone approach, it's definitely not the answer.
This description of wastage, which is really quite a euphemistic way of saying horses that are obviously bound for the knackery at some point, do we have a real picture of the extent of the problem? I've seen different figures from 2,000 a year to 4,000 of the year. Did you get to the bottom of that in your book?
We tried, and I think this is the issue, and I think this is where the horse racing authorities need to take some responsibility, because we haven't had a national traceability register. We haven't had the amount of care going into the exiting of the racing industry as we had with horses entering the racing industry. There's an asymmetry there. And the asymmetry is that when horses, thoroughbreds are born, they have to be born from the two registered parents, a stallion and a mare, both in the stud book. They have to be born by natural conception, and the foal has to be carried by the mare in which it was conceived, so you can't do embryo transfers. So there's a whole lot of concern that goes into ensuring that a horse can enter the racing industry. But at the other end, until recently, there was nothing, and then a form was introduced asking the trainer to say, or the owner to say, once a horse it leaves the industry, where'd it go? And it's only the first step. So it could say it's in a paddock somewhere in Scone or somewhere, and that was the end of it. So there's an asymmetry in terms of the entering the racing industry and leaving the racing industry, and that's created this black hole in terms of the number of horses that could be end up in abattoirs, slaughterhouses. And I think that's an issue that really needs to be addressed. I think the racing industry has to take responsibility for the figures, the accountability. And at the moment, the figures that are being used by Racing Australia in the annual report are just not good enough. They would not pass a high school statistics assignment. It's that poorly presented. So I think that's the starting point for getting accurate information on this issue.
Phil McManus, the conversation... Oh, sorry, Shelley, go on.
No, I was just going to say, Cathy, I don't know whether you remember the Four Corners report on the racing industry about 14, 15 months ago. And the RSPCA were asked, they were interviewed in that particular program and asked what they thought of the wastage rate in racing. And they actually said in that program they didn't have any problem with horses going to the NACRU provided they were treated in a reasonably respectful manner. And I don't think anybody has a problem with that. And I don't disagree with Phil that the 11,000-odd registered foals every year is a lot of horses. But I tell you, the biggest stopper or the biggest drawback in this industry is that the government are very happy to have this industry, because if you actually looked at the figures that each state government gets out of the racing industry by one way or another every year, whether it's through betting revenue or otherwise, there's an awful lot of money goes into government coffers out of the racing industry and the harness racing industry as well, and the greyhound industry. So they're actually not going to bend over backwards to help in any way or form. So the racing industry is going to have to do this on its own. And look, this has been a great wake-up call, and I'm absolutely sure that a lot more will be done, and the traceability of horses in this will be much more, it'll be more onerous for the people who buy and sell horses, I'm quite sure.
Well, actually, in response to the announcement this week from the industry in Victoria about expanding the reform program, the Coalition for the Protection of Racehorses actually called for a much greater financial commitment into horse welfare. It suggests that something like $200 million is needed, but that could be raised by a 1% tax on betting. Is that a good idea?
It's not a bad idea, but I don't know, though, with where you're going to put thousands more horses. That's one of the other problems. In a country where we have a lot of drought and we don't have, you can't just turn horses out into acreage, thoroughbreds out into acreage, and expect them to thrive. They don't do so. I mean, they're horses that require a reasonably decent high-protein diet all their lives. And I'm sure, as Phil McManus could tell you, you can't just turn them out and watch them eat grass. That's just a way of starving them to death.
Phil, you've studied the global horse racing industry. What happens elsewhere? I think there's a levy on breeders in some parts of the US that goes to horse welfare.
Well, the US have a system since 2012. It's about the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, and a number of the leading breeders, places such as Windstar, Three Chimneys Farm and others in Kentucky and elsewhere, have contributed to that, but also the racing tracks, which are privately owned in the US, they have contributed to it along with a number of other trainers. And I think the one good thing about that is it's a whole of industry approach. It's about the responsibility and changing the culture of the industry. So while I like the idea of bringing more money into looking after the horse's post-racing career, and also agree with Shelley, not every horse is going to be suitable, and it's a long way from housing, rehoming every single racehorse. Humane methods of killing horses as a last resort are probably necessary, and that should be accountable. It shouldn't be secret. So I think places such as the US have done some work here, and it's about changing the culture of the industry so it does become everybody's responsibility. The point that Shelley made earlier about selling the horse on, it's correct. I mean, horses can get sold. They're born in, bred in different states. They race in different states, and they have different owners, and then they're moved around across boundaries. So I think that is part of the problem, and it needs to change the culture of the racing and breeding industry, that we start thinking about the aftercare of horses through the management of the horse through its whole life, which includes education and training before it starts racing, so that it has a racing career, maybe 18 months, 2 years, some race for a little bit longer, but aftercare potentially has a life 10, 15 years. And at the moment, there's inadequate training going into those horses for the bulk of their life. Knowing that most of the horses will not be successful on the racetrack or in the breeding barn, we need to be thinking a lot more about aftercare from the very early stages of the horse.
Okay. And Phil, just picking up on that point you made about the need for cultural change within the industry, this conversation has now also turned to the question of jockeys using the whip in racing. The CEO of Racing Victoria conceded that a ban is inevitable, probably in the next decade. Do you think that we should be banning it sooner rather than later?
The answer is yes, in terms of using the whip as a persuade to make horses, tired horses, run faster for longer. I'm quite happy for jockey safety, for the jockeys to be carrying a whip, similar to a police officer carrying a gun or a taser. And if it is used for safety reasons, it should be, the stewards should have an inquiry into the use of it and see if there was any other alternative. They should also be looking to make sure that the whips aren't being waved in the horse's vision during a race, because the horses could associate it with some sort of hitting at a training centre, etc., and remember that. So I think there's some issues there. But it's a welfare issue, but it's also a visibility, it's an optics issue for the industry. It's not a good look.
Shelley, can I bring you in here? In terms of, I guess, the optics for the industry, there are now calls for a royal commission into the treatment of horse races. The Greens are calling for a revamped national animal cruelty law. I think at the moment there's quite a patchwork. Is that part of the problem here, that we've got animal cruelty rules that are out of date?
Yes, I think that is part of the problem. I would agree with Phil that the whip won't be around. I wouldn't imagine the whip will be around as a tool to use it by a jockey in 10 years' time. But we do need not a state-by-state framework. We've needed in this country for many years an Australian racing board that runs racing as an umbrella organisation, not this state-by-state organisation. I think our rules of racing should be applied across the board and from one organisation, not piecemeal as it is now. And until you get that, you're going to get disagreement between states as we have now, and that Queensland totally do not have the same regard for horses that have finished their racing life as, say, Victoria and New South Wales. And I'm sure the same goes for Western Australia. They don't view it the way we view it. So until you get that overarching umbrella, it's quite difficult to do anything. Whether or not a royal commission's justified, I don't know, because I do think thoroughbreds and standardbreds, to a lesser degree, are treated extremely well from birth to the time they exit the industry, or they exit the racing industry. And that's the big problem here, where you've got to do something at the point that they exit the actual racing industry.
Thank you very much for both of you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
Shelley Hancocks is the principal of Hancocks Bloodstock, and Professor Phil McManus is Professor of Urban and Environmental Geography at the University of Sydney.